Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning program produced by Lawrence C. Spivak. Ready for the spontaneous, unrehearsed conference of four of America's top news reporters. Their questions do not necessarily reflect their opinions. It's their way of getting a story for you. Now, here in the absence of the regular moderator, Ned Brooks, here is Lawrence C. Spivak.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest today is the Prime Minister of France, Mr. Guy Mollet, who is in this country for a meeting on Tuesday with President Eisenhower. Mr. Mollet has been in office for 13 months, a record-breaking achievement in the French government. Since World War II, France has changed prime ministers 22 times, and only three have lasted more than a year. That his cabinet has survived the great and continuous crises which have confronted France this past year is a testimonial to his leadership. Premier Mollet began his career as a teacher of English and Latin and a member of the French Socialist Party. By 1932, he was devoting his full time to politics, and in 1946, he rose to Secretary General of his party. During the war, he was captured and freed by the Germans and became a leader in the underground. He was chosen premier in February of 1956. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Mr. Mollet, is John Oakes of the New York Times, Mrs. May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press Herald, Mr. Joseph Harsh of NBC, Mr. Don Gonzales of the United Press. Now, Mr. Mollet, before we start the questioning with the others, I'd like to ask you this. When you left Paris, you were quoted as saying that you would go to Washington, and these were the words of your quotation, bringing nothing and asking nothing. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Now, if you asked for nothing, and if you brought nothing, did you accomplish anything?
I think I have. Do you allow me, Mr. Spivak, first to try and explain a little error, if I might say so, in the way you presented me, just a word. But you spoke of me as having been an English teacher. What would the people over here think of the way the French people choose their English teachers when they listen to me with my awful accent? The truth is that I never taught English, but just English grammar.
Oh, you do pretty well with English, Mr. Prime Minister.
As far as to your question, what I wanted to know, and what now I'm sure to have found, was, is the friendship between the United States and France as strong as it was before? That's the reason why I said I asked for nothing and brought nothing. I just wanted to know here how we are together. And now I'm quite sure, quite confident, that the strength of this friendship is as hard as before.
You believe that the relationship that existed before the invasion of Egypt has now been completely restored?
I'm completely sure of it.
Mr. Gonzales.
Mr. Prime Minister, Arab leaders meeting in Cairo have said Egypt has the right to compensation from, quote, aggressor states, unquote. Does France plan to pay Egypt anything relating to the Suez action?
The day when Egypt asks for such reparations, we'll have to present to a long list of what the canal has costed us since these last four months.
Do you plan to talk with Egypt then about the matter?
Surely not.
If you don't pay compensation, do you expect then that Egypt will let French ships pass through the canal?
But the canal is not an Egyptian canal. It's an international waterway.
But if French ships are barred, what steps do you think should be taken to put them through the canal?
And that's a question. It's difficult to answer because according to the French law, it's not in my right, except to be prosecuted, to say anything about military secrets.
You have charged Egypt in your press club speech with blackmail, and you have questioned their word. How then can you have any hope for a smooth operation of the Suez Canal once it is reopened?
Well, you are right. I've already said a lot of times what we think of Egypt. And I'm quite sure that as soon as I have, you read what Mr. Nasser himself thinks in his little book, The Philosophy of the Revolution. Exactly what Mr. Hitler did before last war in his little book, Mein Kampf. So you get the answer there.
Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Prime Minister, isn't it a hard fact that the United nations, troops cannot go into or stay in any country without the consent of the country.
Without the... I beg your pardon. The consent of the country. Well, till now, the rights which have been given to the United States are not such that they allow that. As far as the French people, we should like to transform the United Nations in such a way that they turn to be a true tribunal. But they are not yet that.
But do you not understand that Mr. Hammarskjöld particularly agreed with Egypt that the United Nations troops would stay there only as long as Egypt allowed them to, and only where Egypt allowed them to?
Well, Mr. Hammarskjöld is for now obliged to stick to the rules of the states as they are. But I repeat again what I feel is that we have to change these rules, but the change will not only to give more power to the Assembly or to the Council of Security, but also to oblige the so-called judges to apply the rule themselves before they say that.
Yes, but, sir, we're dealing with now. What good is all this marching up and down the hill when Egypt can say get out anytime she wants to?
Yes, but Egypt is not the only one to have an answer to give, and some other countries in the world may offer the guarantees that Egypt is not able to give.
Do you, sir, believe that Mr. Nasser is now what your assembly called him last summer, a permanent menace?
Well, it has always been, he still is, I'm afraid he will always be.
Can we do business with him?
Please?
Can we do business with him? Can we work with him? Is he well-meaning now?
Well, you are obliged in international life always to do business with everybody, but when you don't confide in someone, you have to ask for guarantees. An international one.
Mr. Oakes.
Mr. Prime Minister, you suggested that it was a military secret what France was going to do in respect to helping to open the canal. Would you say it was a military secret whether or not French ships would shoot their way, if necessary, through the Straits of Tehran in the Gulf of Aqaba? Well, after the UN forces are withdrawn.
Well, that's one of the places where France is, for the time, has no special rights. This Gulf is not the same sort of waterway as the Suez Canal. We can only be involved in that part of the world if we took part to guarantees, which is possible.
You don't consider that an open international waterway, then?
It is, but not of the same sort
yes.
for French ships as the canal itself.
May I ask how you envisage a settlement of the canal problem itself once the canal has been cleared, the kind of governmental arrangement?
Well, we have, I think, made that very clear in the communique that with President Eisenhower we have accepted the day before yesterday. The six principles which were voted by the Council of Security are still available to us. That
yes.
is that every ship of every country with no discrimination must be allowed to cross, and second, that no country can, by its own politics, have an influence on the canal.
But it has been reported that the Egyptians are rejecting those six principles because they were agreed upon prior to the invasion.
If so, it will be for the United Nations or even to the free nations to give an answer to Mr. Nasser.
But you are not prepared to suggest what that answer should be.
It's too
at this
soon.
Time.
Let's hope that we will not come to that.
May I remind you that you said in Washington that Israel is entitled to have the question of its frontiers definitely settled and its territorial integrity guaranteed. Do the arrangements under which Israel has agreed to withdraw from both the Strait of Tehran and from Gaza meet those conditions? Are you satisfied with that arrangement?
Not yet. The arrangement which is now discussed doesn't give this guarantee, but just says that we must now seek for a settlement, a peace settlement, giving these guarantees. And that's what Israel is due to ask.
So nothing really is settled at all. It's merely a
Not yet.
Purely temporary
Not yet.
Arrangement.
Which surely belong to settle.
Mr. Harsh.
Mr. Prime Minister, when you arrived in Washington, it was the general assumption of the time that the issue between Egypt and Israel was in a serious state of stalemate. And the government of the United States was still talking as though it were thinking of applying sanctions to Israel. By the time you had left Washington, the picture appeared to have changed. Do we regard this as a coincidence, or did you have a hand in changing the picture?
Well, if we could have had a hand, I should be pleased. You see, it's our role to try and be conciliators any time. As for this problem, there's only one question. We cannot accept the idea of coming back to the status quo ante. What we want is just to attack the root of the difficulty, that is to say, to come to this settlement. When we were asked our position, that's what I said. And it seems that an agreement can be found on that line.
Did you succeed in persuading Mr. Eisenhower and Mr. Dulles that it was not desirable to return to the status quo ante?
In external policy, when two statesmen meet, it's not for one to persuade the other. We try and find a compromise together.
You did find a compromise?
I think so. I hope so.
Mr. Gonzales.
Mr. Prime Minister, now that Israeli forces are withdrawing, what do you believe is the next most important step to take in this Middle Eastern snarl?
Oh, now we have to find a common policy in this part of the world. And not only on these political or even military aspects, but chiefly on social and economic aspects. That's one of the parts of the world where the free countries have a great role to play.
How far have you gotten, sir, in your behind-the-scenes negotiations on an interim settlement for the operation of the Suez Canal?
I beg your pardon, I'm not sure.
For a settlement in between, have you gotten anywheres now for a settlement in between before this thing is finally settled, a temporary settlement?
Not yet.
Sir, do you think that there's any chance in the foreseeable future of France reestablishing diplomatic relations with Egypt?
Well, it's always possible. We have a diplomatic relation with countries who, the politics of which we disapprove as well as much as the one of Egypt.
Would you welcome such a step?
Yes, but if first we have an agreement of which is essential, that is a canal.
Only then would you want to reestablish diplomatic relations.
And don't forget, I beg your pardon, don't forget that we have some other reasons with Egypt as far as, don't forget the Athos, the ship that brought arms to Algeria.
Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Prime Minister, I understand France is estimated to have only about 30 years more coal resources. How long will you have to depend on oil before you have atomic power for your needs?
Well, first, Mrs. Craig, I must say that I don't at all agree with the idea that we have only 30 years coal before us. What I have been told is that we have now more than 100 years coal before us. Yes.
I was misinformed.
But second, we have oil. We are finding now oil, even in France, and we have a lot in Sahara. And we are sure that in the next 10 years, we are able to use atomic energy for civil purposes.
How long?
10 years, more. We have already begun,
this year to have electricity
from...
Yes. Yes, but meantime, for 10 to 20 years, you must depend on oil. Will you help Israel build a canal or build pipelines to carry oil through to the Mediterranean in order to bypass Egypt?
There's at least one lesson in this canal affair, which is that Europe cannot accept the idea that oil could be stopped now just by the canal, so that we have to find all sorts of resources, diversify our sources. That's the reason why we are much in favor of pipelines through Israel, through Turkey, through Sahara, and so on.
Can you get the capital for that?
We always can find the capital when we want.
Can you hold Algeria and its great new oil supplies?
I'm quite sure we can.
Is Russia trying to stop you?
Is
Russia trying to inflame Algeria against
Egypt? Russia surely doesn't want us to stay there, but I'm quite sure that if we have an adversary in Russia, we have some good friends elsewhere.
Mr. Prime Minister, how much damage has the closing of the Suez Canal done to the French economy?
Wonderful damages.
Wonderful, you mean terrible.
Terrible. But yes, that's right. But the country really proved to be courageous. And now we have recovered.
Well, how long? You say recovered. How long can you continue without serious damage to your economy if the Suez Canal is closed to you?
Well, as long as we have friends all over the world.
As long as your friends have...
As long as we have friends, like as you are, to permit us to buy here the oil that we can find elsewhere.
You think you can go on indefinitely, then, under such circumstances?
Well, surely it's expensive, but we try our best.
Mr. Harsh.
Mr. Prime Minister, if I may change the subject. If I'm not mistaken, at the recent meetings about the strength of various European armed forces in Europe, the French delegation enlisted in a general campaign to dissuade the British from reducing their troop commitments in Germany. You yourself have reduced your troop commitments in Germany. Do you intend shortly to return to Germany those elements of your garrison which were taken away?
Yeah, we have weakened our forces in Germany, but even now, they are not less than what they ought to be according to the treaty. No. You may take information about that. And if we oppose to this idea of having less forces, it's for a reason that I have already said. It's not chiefly a question of armaments. It's a question of human beings. We want to have in Germany British and, let me say, chiefly American boys, for the reason that there will never be any war if the Russians know that they have human beings, American and British human beings there. I've always used this example. In 1914 or 1939, if there had been 10 million American people, their hands in their pockets, even without arms, along the Rhine, neither William II nor Hitler would have accepted the idea of a war. That's our reason.
You say 10 million.
Oh, 10 million. Just 10,000. Oh, I beg your pardon. My English
Sir,
is so poor.
Do you think the time is approaching when there will be any useful prospect of negotiations with the Russians looking towards a withdrawal of troops of occupation from Central and Eastern Europe?
That time may come. But the recent events in Poland and in Hungary make me believe that we have not yet come to the time.
Mr. Oakes.
Then as the socialist leader of France, you're quite far apart from the socialist leader of West Germany on this subject.
Not so far. My friend Eric Olonard has already explained that if he were in charge, he would obey the treaties which have been signed. What he says, and that I understand, because he is German, he says that he must pay greater attention than we do to German reunification. But on the principle, we don't differ.
Mr. Mollet, I'd like to get back just a moment to Israel. It has been reported, as you know, that the French government knew in advance of the Israeli attack on Egypt and helped the Israelis in one way or another prior to their own invasion. Wasn't this then help, if this is true, in whole or in part, wasn't it then a question of helping Israel violate the Charter of the United Nations?
Well,
is it true? Let's get to that first. Is it true?
Is it true that we helped Israel?
Knew about it in advance and...
Well, Israel had for long asked France to be helped in armaments. And we never tried not to let known that we did it. We really helped Israel as for armaments, but not only in the last month, a year before.
No, but did you know in advance that Israel was going to attack before she attacked?
Except the very last days before.
But, would it be correct to say that some encouragement was given from France to Israel on this?
No, that would be an error. On the contrary. Try and think of this little country who was quite sure to be destroyed, who was menaced quite every day to be destroyed, and who after the Jordan elections knew that there was a common army form on the two sides of it.
Then you really are defending a violation of the Charter in this instance, isn't that correct,
I am not defending. I will never defend a violation of the Charter. It is not a violation of the Charter, because the right for self-defense has always been accepted by the Charter.
May I ask you one question about Algeria, sir? You have promised free elections to Algeria after a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. Suppose those elections should result in a large or even a sizable majority in favor of independence. The elections to the proposed assembly, what would happen?
Well, it will happen very simply that we'll discuss with the people who will be elected. But everybody always makes the same supposition. Everybody says, well, suppose that there will be a majority. Probably the leaders of the armed rebellion don't believe that it, because as they don't accept the elections. They are not so sure to be representing the majority of the country.
You don't think they would?
I hope they are not. I don't know. Nobody can know in a democratic system who will be elected the day after.
Mr. Gonzales.
Mr. Prime Minister, instead of accepting your ceasefire offer, however, the Algerian rebels seem to be talking more in terms of a fight to the finish. Is it your opinion that they may yet accept this offer?
Well, I am quite sure that till the last day, before they accept the ceasefire, they will pretend that they are able to go on the longer.
Are you suggesting, sir, that there is a deadline?
I don't know. That I don't know.
Well, you said the last day.
I am no prophet.
Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Prime Minister, do you think history will show that the United States was wrong in pressuring Britain, France, and Israel to come out of Egypt, or will it show that you were wrong to go in?
I regret, madam, but I have just said I am no prophet. Less history say it, tell it. I can't answer.
Mr. Hart.
It's important.
Mr. Prime Minister.
Who can know?
Yeah. What will be the attitude of the French government the next time the question of admission of Red China to the United Nations comes up in the UN?
As for my government, it's very clear we have already said that we are in favor.
Mr. Oakes.
Mr. Prime Minister, to what do you attribute the fact that you have lasted longer as Prime Minister than anyone else since the war?
Well, I would like to be able to answer. If so, I should know how to go on. But the answer is not mine. Try and ask some parliamentarians.
What do you think the chances are of your continuing for any length of time?
I don't know, but even if I were there only for 1 week or 2 weeks, I would go on working as I'm doing now.
Mrs. Craig.
Mr. Prime Minister, who do you think ought to pay for clearing the canal if nobody is going to get to use it except friends of Egypt?
Well, as for that, I think it's a decision to be made by the United Nations for all the countries, and at least for all the countries which has an interest in it, and
Russia,
chiefly Egypt.
Russia has said she's not going to pay.
Russia has said.
So. Yes, sir.
Well,
do you think we should pay to clear it if we don't use it?
Please?
Do you think we should pay to clear it if we can't use it?
No. It has been a decision from the United Nations. When you belong to a body, either you obey the decisions of the body, or then you have better stop taking part in it.
But Egypt has disobeyed the United Nations in discriminations in the canal.
Yes, I know that the reason, one of the reasons why I've always been so keen against Egypt.
Mr. Gonzales.
Speaking of money, Mr. Prime Minister, did you discuss with Mr. Eisenhower the possibility of France needing a loan either now or sometime later this year?
Not at all. Not in a word about that.
Do you think, sir, that France may need American financial help later?
Impossible to say now, but my hope is that we can recover by ourselves.
You don't think that you'll have to cut your own military and budget expenditures then?
I will have to make a lot of economies, at least 200 million francs, milliard francs.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I see our time is up.
Monitor's thanks to Premier Guy Mollet and the members of the panel for a significant and enlightening half hour. Meet the Press, produced by Lawrence Spivak. Got to run now, Don Russell. Take care of the store and say hello to Dave.